This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 23.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview Tim Borland, who ran 63 marathons in 63 days. And in the quick tip, you will hear about a tool to help accelerate muscle recovery after a run. So it's been a while since we've gotten a podcast episode out, but it has been quite a busy 3 or 4 weeks for us, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Very eventful.
As many of you know, Angie had her baby, and he came into the world healthy, safe and sound. His name is Liam, and we are just so proud of him. He came 7 pounds and...
9 ounces.
9 ounces.
Minor details.
I had it. You just kind of beat me to it. Yeah, so anyway, I barely got Angie to the hospital. We got there, no kidding. We got to the hospital at 11:30 at night on a Friday. And she had her baby at 11:37.
If we had delayed even 10 minutes, he would have been doing a car delivery, so...
Which I was totally not ready for.
It's definitely in the nick of time, but our little Liam was definitely eager to get here.
Yeah, and maybe you can talk about, you know, this pregnancy, because this is our third child. And from my perspective, it was looked like the easiest delivery, and certainly the fastest.
Yes, I don't think you could improve on the speed. Yeah, I mean, I was able to run through halfway through my second trimester until the impact got to be too much. And, you know, I was able to stay active, cross-training, using the elliptical and cycling and yoga. And so I pretty much exercised every day, which I
did a half marathon.
I did a half marathon when I was, 14 weeks along, and a couple smaller races a little bit later on. So... yeah, I was, you know, able to stay active, and I definitely think that helped as far as the overall comfort of my pregnancy, and definitely with the labor and delivery. If you're in better shape physically, it's going to help you through any challenge you have to face in life, whether it's pregnancy or something down the road that you don't know about yet.
The people at the YMCA were afraid she's going to have the baby there one day because she's always there.
I think half the people had bets going whether I was going to deliver in the exercise room. And in fact, the day that I did have Liam, I was working out like normal there that morning, running on the elliptical and doing some lower body weights and everything. So I guess maybe they should have been scared.
And after the baby was born... you know, it was really exciting. It's always just awesome to hold a newborn baby in your hands. But you look like you could have just walked out of that hospital and came home that night.
I probably could have. You know, I felt pretty good. Of course, then kind of hits you later, what the work that your body's been through. It's kind of like after you finish a marathon, you feel like you're on top of the world. I mean, physically, you're feeling some pain and soreness. But, you know, emotionally and mentally, you feel like you're on top of the world, like you could conquer anything. Mm-hmm. And then kind of the next day, it all kind of hits you, some of the soreness and what your body actually went through. But it is an amazing, amazing thing.
So what is harder, having a baby or running a marathon?
Having a baby, hands down. Okay. So all you ladies out there who have, you know, had children, you definitely have what it takes to run a marathon.
Yeah.
Because the marathon of pregnancy and childbirth, in my opinion, is a lot more challenging.
Okay, so now what's your plan for getting back in marathon condition?
Well, obviously there's a period of time where your body needs to recover from childbirth, and you know, your joints and ligaments are still kind of overly flexible from the hormones that are released during pregnancy. So it's important to take it slowly, and like I always encourage, start to build your running base back and listen to your body. So, you know, I plan on just kind of starting slowly to probably run, walk, and I've done a few test jogs already. Uh-huh. Just because I couldn't help myself. But, you know, I really have to keep that mentality in mind, just to take it slow. You know, I'm definitely on this running journey for life, and so I don't want to rush things too quickly and get injured and everything, but I'm definitely eager to start training again, hopefully, in the next couple of months.
Oh, excellent. Well, we've had a lot of things happening, too. We opened up MTA Member, and probably a lot of you have heard about that. It's a membership option for those that want more help in their training and want to work more closely with Angie and go through some great courses and lessons on marathon training and other aspects of running and fitness. And that has been quite an undertaking, too. Maybe not quite as bad as having a baby, but...
Well, I've been teasing you that this is your kind of childbirth experience because you're on the technical side of things and you're having to do a lot of the work. You know, obviously, I've done a lot of the work creating content, but you have an equally big job with getting that uploaded and ready to go, getting the site looking nice and user-friendly. So it's definitely been a big challenge and a great experience for both of us, and we're eager to welcome new members and interact with you and, you know, help you in any way we can to reach your running goals.
Yeah, and if you want to get a free 14-day membership, you can go over to marathontrainingacademy.com and click the Join Now button on the top of the page. Well, there's been some awesome things happening out there in our listening community, and you've been following along, even though you haven't been interacting as much here in the last couple weeks as you'd like to, but definitely keeping up with the progress people are making as they talk about it on Facebook and on our blog and different emails that you get. So you want to give a few shout-outs here in this episode.
That's right. I really do enjoy the dialogue that goes on our Facebook page, and we have 1,539 fans as of right now. So wow. I really appreciate everyone who posts, you know, comments and questions and their progress on that page and also on our blog and comments there. It's very inspiring to hear your stories, and congratulations to everyone who has done a race over the weekend. I know a lot of people had marathons on 10-10-10. It was definitely a big day. So great job to all of you. I've got a note here from Christoph, and he is from Belgium. He says, "Hi, Angie. I'm an enthusiastic runner who runs 3 times a week for about 15K. I found by coincidence you and your husband's podcast and what drives you to run a marathon, and I became even more enthusiastic also in reaching that ultimate goal of running a marathon. I did a test at a local runner's store and established my maximum heart rate and got a training program to run my first marathon in April. So still looking forward to receiving info and tips and great podcasts from your side, but you've already put me on track. Hope that everything runs well in your life. Thanks again and kindest regards to you and your family from Belgium. Keep up the great work."
Well, that's awesome. All the way from Belgium, it really sounds like he's taking action, just taking what he hears on the podcast and other things and just doing it. That's what it takes, isn't it?
That's right. Definitely. My next note here comes from Brian, and he lives in Florida. He says, "Hi, Angie. I'm an aspiring half marathoner in Orlando. I've been running for about a year and a half. Decided to step it up and try to do a half marathon in December. Although I was athletic as a child and young adult, I never really enjoyed running. Now I'm approaching middle age, say 40s, and I've started running now and find it totally addicting. So much better than coffee in the morning. I stumbled upon your podcasts and really enjoy them. I listen to them during my midweek shorter runs, and they're great motivation. Thanks to you and Trevor for this series, as they offer great advice, tips, and confirmation. And they are the running companion I typically don't have at 6 a.m. on a Tuesday. All the best to you and your family, both personally and professionally, with the Marathon Training Academy site." And that's from Brian.
Well, that's really nice. He takes us out running with him at 6 in the morning. A lot earlier than I like to get up. But
didn't know you got up that early, did you?
Well, congratulations to all of you who are just taking action and discovering the joy of running. And keep it up. We are just always blessed to hear the accomplishments that you're making.
That's right.
Okay, so for this episode, we have a pre-recorded interview that we did with Tim Borland, who ran 63 marathons in 63 days. So he might know a little bit about marathon training.
I would say so.
But yeah, Tim's just a great guy, and he's just a family man and down to earth, and spent, you know, well over an hour on the phone talking to us, and we got to just really ask him a lot of good questions. And we only put part of the interview in this episode because it's just pretty long, but the full-length interview will be inside MTA Member. For those of you who are part of MTA Member, you'll find it in there.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
All right, we are on the podcast today with Tim Borland. He began running marathons in 2001 and has gone on to accomplish some superhuman feats. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in kinesiology and has been an endurance coach and wellness director and has run 63 marathons in 63 days. He is also a motivational speaker and the founder and director of an organization called Race for Good. And just to let everybody know, you can check out Tim's website over at timborland.com. Tim, good to have you on the podcast today, man.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, 63 marathons. You know how that makes me feel?
Like you want to go run 64?
Oh, that is awesome.
Now, we became aware of you first through the documentary Feat, 63 Marathons in 63 Days. And you did this in 2007, I think, to raise awareness and money for the AT Cure Tour. Now, I'm sure most of our listeners aren't familiar with AT. So tell us a little bit about this disease and how you became involved with this project.
Sure. Well, first, let me tell you, from a marketing standpoint, now looking back, it was, we probably should have titled the tour something a little bit different. only because you're right, nobody knows about. So the AT Children's Project is an organization out of Florida. And they're there, that's where the founders live with their two kids with AT. But the AT Children's Project was formed there, and we put together the AT Cure Tour, of course, as a way to raise awareness and funds for AT, which is also shortened for, and you'll know why when I tell you the name, ataxia telangiectasia.
Yes, that's quite a mouthful.
It's quite a mouthful. That's the clinical name. But, of course, oftentimes, we just refer to it as AT. And then to better understand it, I kind of give you, the clinical, and then there's just the comparative. So the clinical is AT is a neurological genetic disease, and it combines some of the worst symptoms of cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, and autoimmune deficiencies.
Wow.
And then on top of that, kids with AT are highly susceptible to cancer.
Wow.
So then from a comparative standpoint, it's compared to a childhood form of Lou Gehrig's disease.
Okay.
It's a rough combination.
Wrap your mind around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, with those combinations, and also because it's degenerative.
Yes.
AT attacks the cerebellum, and so it essentially these kids are born absolutely normal. They pick up on all your normal learned activities. They'll learn how to dance and ride bikes and throw balls and play sports and do all the other things that kids love to do. And then one of the most crushing understandings of AT is that, the kids will they're completely cognizant, right? Mm-hmm. And they're intelligent, they're bright, they're funny. You know, they'll dream big dreams. They'll want to be, astronauts or athletes or, whatever, a lot of kids dream about, and even parents, right, get wrapped around, wanting to see their kids do big things.
Right.
And yet, all the while, they're trapped inside this body that's going to just deteriorate. And ultimately, in mid-20s right now, early to mid-20s, they're going to pass away.
No, that's
terminal.
Wow. That's crazy.
So the progression is, they're born absolutely normal. They pick up on these learned activities, but then 6 to 10 is this rapid degeneration, and by 10 they end up in a wheelchair, almost guaranteed, 100%. I mean, it's just astonishing at how, how well they'll be doing at, 9.5, and you think that, wow. you're ahead of the curve, and then boom, at 10, it's time for a wheelchair, and then it starts to affect their speech, and so they have a harder time communicating, and they get passed off as kids that aren't bright or intelligent because they don't have the speech, and then it starts to affect their swallowing, and that affects their ability to drink, and so then they have to end up with tubes sometimes, and it just continues. It's just this, it's an ugly, it's a horrific disease. It's ugly, and a lot of the researchers are great at just saying, look, this is one of the most horrific diseases we've ever seen, because the kids are completely there, they're completely cognizant, but they're
trapped in this body that
they're trapped inside this body that doesn't function. Yeah.
Wow.
So you can imagine the inspiration when you meet. So for me, I met Catherine Achilles when I met her when she was 15, I think almost 16, and I met her out here in the Bay Area. And, you know, as I got to know her, and particularly I first met her dad. He wanted to train for marathon. It was going to be his first one. He had never run a marathon before and was looking to get some help. And a mutual friend introduced us and said, hey, you know, Tim, meet Jim. Jim, meet Tim. You know, Tim's a marathon training coach, and Jim's a pastor, and he needs help, you know, running. And it'd be great if you could just do it for him for free. And I said, sure, no problem. I'd love to help. And so I started training Jim for his first marathon, and then I, you know, came to find out about his daughter who had this disease, and all the while I had kind of reached a point, and we can talk about it more in some of the other questions, but I had reached a pinnacle in my running where it was like, okay, this is absolutely insane. I need to now just start doing something purposeful and intentional, because
right.
I seem to have this giftedness that's so ridiculous. I need to use it for something. And so I really kind of went on a quest to try to find a way to plug in, and I wanted something unusual and different, something that truly was not known and not heard of, a disease that was exceptionally rare, and, you know, an organization that truly needed a sounding board, that needed a platform, you know, for getting the word out. So as I got to know Jim and meet his daughter, you know, kind of the pieces all started coming together, and then, you know, I traveled with Jim to a big marathon. We went to the Disney World Marathon in Orlando. And as it turned out, and we didn't even know when we signed up for it, that the AT Children's Project takes a team of about 400 people there every year, you know, and they come together, they, you know, spend the months before training and raising funds, and then a whole group comes down to Orlando every year, and they band together, and they, a lot of new families meet each other, and it's just a big fun reunion. You know, it's obviously somber, you know, somber, but it's also celebratory as well. And but it's just a chance for everybody to get together, and so Jim and I ended up going to that event, and so it definitely was meant to be, you know, because Jim just thought he was going to sign up for, you know, he was going to do his first marathon, and our buddy said, hey, you got to do Disney World. They put on a great show. They even put your name on your bib, so everybody cheers for you. I still get confused by that when I'm running. Everyone's like, hey, go Tim. Like, how do you know my name?
Exactly.
You're famous, man.
I forget it's on my bib. Yeah. So then the crux of it was, you know, Saturday, you know, as you might know, I'm sure as a lot of the listeners might know, you know, typically how it goes, right, is when you kind of go with an organization, you know, you always have your pasta dinner the night before and kind of a get-together. And so the AT Children's Project does that. And so I was there, you know, the Saturday night before the race, and the founder of the organization gets up, and he kind of talks about some of the neat things that have been happening with the disease research and the progressions they're making. But then he kind of dropped the ball, and, you know, the black cloud was, hey, you know, the challenge is nobody knows about us. And awareness is the catalyst and the precursor to getting funds, which is what's needed to drive research
right. Further
our efforts. So, you know, really the call was, hey, nobody, you know, nobody knows about us. And so what are we going to do to get national awareness and attention?
Yes.
And because there's only 500 kids, kind of the fact of the matter is they've been, you know, told, not necessarily directly, but it kind of said, hey, you know, there's not enough of you for world-class research.
Hmm.
You know, and no parent is willing to stand by and take my kids not worth world-class research as an answer. So what was so moving for me was that, you know, at that point in time, we had our first daughter. She was 10 months old, and so now I'm a father. And, you know, so I had that, I was able to relate to the other parents, and then, of course, imagine my daughter, you know, out there. At this point in time now, the kids are out on the dance floor. They're celebrating. Hey, we raised $1.2 million this year for research. And I'm thinking,
wow.
Oh, gosh.
You know, that's amazing.
You're talking about, when you're the only ones trying to drive research for this, you know, for any kind of, you know, medical research. But, you know, but they're still celebrating and excited about, you know, their efforts. And I'm thinking, you know, man, my daughter could be out there. This could be us. You know, but it's not, so we need to do something, right? We need to, and that's really when my heart was moved to want to help, and I didn't know what that looked like, so I had to go home and talk through it with some people and pray about it and consider, and all the hours I'd spend running, I'm just, all these thoughts are going through my mind, and it was about 10 months later that it kind of all came together, and I called the Children's Project and just said, look, I really want to help.
So, Tim, how much were you able to raise through the Cure Tour?
We were able to raise about $750,000.
Man, that is awesome.
I believe that was kind of the gross you know, what we kind of saw come through, of course, we had, you know, tour expenses and other things along the way. But, yeah, it definitely helped boost funding for that 1 year.
Yes, significantly.
But, but what I think, you know, what's kind of shown itself to be even more valuable in the end is has been the strengthened community within the AT Children's Project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many more families that weren't already plugged in have gotten plugged in, that and now having this movie that so many all the families really can identify with.
Yes.
You know, there's three families that are featured in the film, and they share the story of you know, of their life and what it's like to have, you know, for one family it's two young boys, and what it's like to have, you know, young kids just learning about the disease. For another, it's a family with a daughter who's just kind of moving from independence to dependence, and she's around 9 or 10 going into a wheelchair. And and then the third, they're all just, oh my gosh, they're all just heartbreaking stories, you know, and they represent, you know, they represent different stages of the disease. And then, of course, the third family is Catherine and her story and what it's like to be kind of high school and beyond, and what do you do having to live with this disease. So they're stories that, you know, all the other families can relate to, and now it's almost like they can grab this film and say, hey, you know, we want to have a screening, we want to reach out to our community, you know, and people can now see the film, right? And they can identify with.
Good. How did you decide on the 63 marathons and 63 days? I mean, how did that all come about as far as,
you know,
that number?
In some ways I say, unfortunately, there's no profound messaging, you know, behind the 63 and 63. But there's definitely profound purpose, which, you know, is more important than anything else. I mean, we kind of put, you know, trying to set some sort of record, you know, out of the equation. We took, you know, any kind of, hey, what's never been done before, let's try to do that, you know, out of the equation. Really what we did was try to step back and say, okay, we've got a guy who thinks he can run some ridiculous number of days in a row, and we can leverage that for mass media. And
right.
Then, you know, we've got these families all around the country that in a lot of cases don't even know each other and don't know the stories of other families, and they don't really have that community. So the question was, what can we do with Tim's desire to want to run and our need for awareness? And so really what we decided was, hey, let's start it, you know, let's start in LA and let's go all the way to New York. Let's do a coast to coast journey. And then, you know, as often as possible, let's meet up with families in their community so that we can bring the tour to them, because, you know, as you can imagine, just even talking about the disease, it's, you know, you're not going to go out and run Route 66 and have families, you know, truck their kids out to try to come see you and cheer you on while you, you know, run by.
Right, exactly.
So it was so much more powerful and meaningful for us to come to them and run in their community, and then open up, you know, we kind of opened up the last 3 miles to the community and said, hey, come out and run with Tim, run with the family, run with Jake. You know, the last 3 miles, Tim will be pushing Jake in the stroller and come run with them and, you know, be a part of the event. And so, you know, that was so much more doable for people, and we'd usually have that happen in the evening. So we made it, you know, intentional where, you know, 63, almost every day, you know, along the way, we could actually include the communities and include the families. And so what ended up happening is we started at the Disneyland Half Marathon, and I ran that twice.
Okay.
And then as we started looking at the dates and moving across the country, we saw we'd be in New York, you know, right around the New York City Marathon. So we decided it would be a good idea to go coast to coast and to bookend the tour with kind of two sanctioned events. Initially, my proposal was 50 days, but, you know, that pushed us up to 63, and, you know, I just swallowed the 13 days and figured, hey, if we're already out there for 50, what's another 13?
No, I heard you hit the wall at about day three. So
that's about day three, yeah.
Tell us about that and how you got past that.
Man, well, you know, to try to keep it short but specific to maybe things that listeners would be interested in, really the reason why, you know, I think the reason why I bonked was because, you know, so often, and actually you ask this further down, so we'll get to a little bit more, but so often we spend all of our time training for the miles and you know, the distance, and, you know, we train the, kind of train your mind and your, and even, you know, train your body and even your mind for the mental aspect, but we don't put enough care and concern into the hydration and nutrition.
Right.
So like I said, I know that's one of your questions, so we'll get into it in greater detail, but just telling you about day three and, you know, day four, it was about mile 20 on day three that my body essentially just shut down. And, you know, so I kind of did a typical grab a Snickers bar and, you know, a Coke, right, and try to just sugarify yourself.
A good old sugar high.
yeah, to get to the finish and drag yourself in. But that didn't work, and I got to the finish and I was delirious, I was dizzy, I was, you know, starting to black out a little bit. I said, thank you, everybody, for coming out. I got to sit down.
Right. Wow.
And so I was just kind of up against the fence, and it's cool. You'll see that in the film again. They kind of show that, and it's kind of a pivotal point in the journey. But yeah, essentially what happened was, you know, I should have been eating a lot more than I was. You know, if you're running a marathon every single day, it's one thing just to hydrate and, well, to fuel,
yeah,
get enough food in your body to run one marathon.
Right.
But, you know, when you're running day after day after day, there's a lot more involved. And so thankfully I was working with a woman at Stanford University in the Human Performance Lab.
Good.
And so, yeah, I got a lot of really high quality training and testing. I mean, this, the lady I worked with, Stacey Sims, she's usually testing and training, working with Olympic athletes out of Stanford. So I was able to call Stacy on her phone, and I got her on her cell phone. It was late, you know, we barely got through day three. I finished. We just kind of, so I drank a bunch of, you know, I tried drinking a bunch of Ensure, which, you know, we had cases of Ensure that I was just trying to do that to help get extra calories. I took in a bunch of Endurox Recovery, which is a common, you know, recovery drink. So I probably drank close to 2,000 calories in liquids, just trying to, you know, trying to get something in my body, and it didn't stay down for very long.
Oh, no.
Everything just came up, yeah, and so I basically went to bed totally depleted, empty stomach, you know, nauseous, and just crashed out in the RV while my buddy drove us up to Sacramento for day four, and I was supposed to be up at 6 a.m. running on day four, and as you'll see in the film, it's like 6 o'clock, you know, I did a local interview, and then 9:30, and then 12:30, and I'm still not running. So finally, 12:30, I was getting ready to try to have some food and maybe get in a lunch because I didn't really get in a breakfast. And I called Stacy and I got a hold of her. And, you know, the short of it is Stacy said, look, Tim, you know, you've been running on absolutely empty. And so what's happened, you know, from a physiological standpoint is the gap junctions in your intestines have opened up. They're allowing toxins to get in, and now you're sick and you're nauseous. And so, you know, your body is not going to handle anything that's fatty, that's acidic, that's heavy. The only thing you can take right now, she prescribed me white rice. It's the only thing I got to eat. And
wow.
And then she said, you know, the only thing I want you drinking right now is Pedialyte.
To rehydrate, huh?
Well, to rehydrate, but also what's really interesting, and so I've told, you know, I've been passing this on to people and even telling some of my buddies who are involved with races that they should carry Pedialyte in the first aid tent and at the finish line. because what a Pedialyte does is, yeah, not only does it hydrate you, but it's made for infants. And so it's very delicate. It's actually much more medicated than any other hydrator. So it's meant to actually repair the linings of your intestines and get, you know, close those gaps, and it's hydrator, but it's also a lot more than that. It's medicated. And so Stacy put me on the Pedialyte for that purpose. And then the white rice is super soft, easy to digest, but it's also high in complex carbohydrates. And man, like if she wasn't spot on, I swear, like I wouldn't have survived. You know, I had an incredible team. I give all of our success to, you know, the team that was on board. But Stacy that day was, you know, it was the one that was able to get me, you know, physically. I mean, mentally, I had a lot more reason to get out and run, but physically, Stacy got me up. I was within 3 hours of starting this process, I was out running.
She patched up really quick. That's great.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. So white rice and Pedialyte for everybody listening. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's something that will save you whenever you're just digestion, your digestive tract is messed up and you're feeling this, you know, crazy bunk. It's yeah, it bounced back quickly. So I ended up running a 4:40 marathon that day, and staying on white rice and Pedialyte, not solely, but still a lot of it the next couple of days. And it took several days to kind of wean off of that and get back on the food. And then of course the other aspect was we had a family. You know, my buddy Chad was there. Chad's 20, he's 22 now, but I think he was 19 at the time with AT, and he was there, just big old smile on his face. Tim, you can do it. You can do it, man. I'm cheering for you. And how do you tell a guy like that you can't do it?
Yeah.
If they're all that he has to face on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, right? So that was the day three, day four test, and taught me a lot about how I need to, the takeaway from that was I got to be serious about fueling and eating.
Exactly. I mean, many people in our audience are training for one marathon and are often faced with, that hitting the wall or that bonking. So, what kind of strategies can you give to them, as they're doing their long runs and building up towards that marathon?
Sure. So, yeah, it'd be different in a single marathon. There's a couple things. I'm coaching a number of people right now, and what I always, again, try to emphasize with people is first and foremost, you can put in all the miles that you want, but if you're not properly hydrated and fueled, you're in trouble. I mean, you're going to, like that, hitting the wall is basically a byproduct of I either don't have enough electrolytes in me, so I'm low on sodium, which means I can't retain water and be hydrated, or I'm low on calcium, which means I can't process the magnesium and the potassium, which is also in electrolytes, which reduces cramping.
Yes.
So, electrolytes are so critically important, for the long haul, and so it's either I don't have the electrolytes that I need, or I don't have the glycogen, which is our fuel source in the form of carbohydrates. And so I don't have the glycogen that I need. And what a lot of people don't know, and I'm, studying kinesiology, and when you find yourself getting proficient in some area, it's funny, sometimes you just find yourself assuming that it's common knowledge.
Right.
And so as I've shared some things with people, I've gotten a lot of ahas, like, really? I had no idea. If people would just tell us that, like, it would make my life... I would take it seriously.
Yes.
Like they think that the whole idea about eating a goo every 45 minutes is a marketing scheme that they have. They put on the back of the pack, eat every 45 minutes so they can sell a bunch of them, right?
Right.
But the reality is our body can only store actually like 90 minutes of glycogen.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you do, you can't store any more than about 90 minutes. And so if you're not taking in, you're never going to replace all the calories that you burn, but you got to be taking in, the 100 calories every 30. I even try to get people to do it every 30 minutes, instead of 45, to really stay on top of it and take it seriously, because, again, no matter how strong you were going into the run, and no matter how well you're set up for running a sub 3-hour marathon, if you don't take in what you need, you're going to hit the wall.
Yeah, you got to keep that motor running, the fuel.
Yeah, you do. Now, I won't go into it, but the other aspect that I share with people in training that I applied as well on my 63-day marathon tour was kind of the notion of respecting the distance, knowing that, whether you're running, for me it was, hey, I'm running 63 marathons, what am I going to do on day one? It's like running 100K, and I got 63 miles I'm running, so if I'm at mile three, what am I doing? Well, I'm definitely not sprinting uphill, and I'm definitely not running past the aid station.
Right.
I'm taking it really slow and easy. I'm pacing myself because at mile three, I still got 60 miles to go. So what I find for, a lot of races that I go to, a lot of marathons, is that, people come to the race, they come to the race with an idea, they've been trained and prepared to run a certain pace, but then kind of the race, the excitement and the adrenaline takes them away, and then the crowd, and then the gun going off, and then, all of a sudden, I was with the 4:15 pace group, but I feel like I could run a sub-4 today, so I'm going to get with the 4-hour pace group. And all of a sudden, I just shaved 15 minutes off my time.
Right.
And they're at mile 10, and already they're starting to wonder, why they're feeling tired. And mile 15, they're starting to buckle at the waist. And mile 20, they're shuffling, and it's an ugly mess trying to get to the finish. So pacing is also a huge part of avoiding the bonking or the hitting the wall. I'd say bonking is probably relative to nutrition and hydration, and hitting the wall is relative to pacing. That's kind of how I'd classify it. Hitting the wall is, hey, I ran too fast too soon, and now I'm hitting the wall. My wheels are coming off because, you know, I should have, even though I'm feeling great at mile five, I should remember I got 21 miles to go. I got plenty of time to make it up in the end.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
So that's kind of what I teach and train.
And that's what those long runs are for, to practice, you know, your fueling and your pace and hydration so that you shouldn't have to do anything new on race day.
Yes. Yeah. Very important, right? That you work out all the kinks going into it. And, you know, and then the other thing is, you know, walking around the expos, and I always cringe, you know, there's so many people, and I know a lot of people buy stuff for later, but how many people buy new shoes and new shirts and new little running belts and little gadgets and things to wear on race day? And you know, again, you're thinking, man, you might be okay, but you might not. And I know it's tough because the race experience is always really, really electrifying and whatnot. But yeah, definitely working that stuff out beforehand, figuring out what foods you can take, what liquids you can take, but making sure that you're definitely taking enough and you're drinking and eating real frequently.
All right. Well, I got the next question. You also do motivational speaking, and the main theme seems to be maximizing the dash. Can you tell us what maximizing the dash means to you?
Yes, I'll definitely tell you what maximizing the dash means. I'll also, before I go into it, tell you that I'm a runner. I'm not an IT guy. I'm not a webmaster.
Okay.
So, I've kind of, you know, you just seem like you're always evolving and changing, and kind of, you know, what your mantra is or what you're delivering. And so, I kind of have a new kind of a new working theme, but I still very much believe in maximize the dash. And kind of how I came up with it was just the idea that there's one mark that's going to appear on everybody's tombstone. You know, you see the year born, dash, you know, the year that they died.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that dash, of course, represents your life.
Right.
And so when you think about the dash, you know, and you think about that mark, really it's about what we were here doing. And I think, you know, most of what we do will probably be forgotten when we pass on. You know, but I think it's what we leave. It's our legacy that's remembered. So usually, you know, so the question that I usually ask is, you know, what are we doing to maximize the impact of our life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are we building a legacy? And, you know, what will people remember us for?
That's good. Yeah, I've heard that analogy too, because there's so much that could be said just in that dash between the two numbers. And that's what I admire about you, is that it looks like you love to live large and set your sights on accomplishing huge goals. So it looks like to me you're definitely maximizing it. We'll get you an extra big dash on your tombstone.
Awesome. I love that. In bold. I also, you know, I think another important, the reason why I've kind of modified, you know, my mantra a bit too, is because, you know, you try to share the story of what you've accomplished and very, you know, it's really hard to relate to, well, gosh, this guy, first of all, I don't relate to running. And then, you know, how in the world, I can't even fathom running a marathon a day for 2 months. So kind of what I've kind of gravitated towards is this idea that ordinary people can accomplish the extraordinary every day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then it's kind of the subtitle is what happens when when passion ignites vision, you know, and so it's different for everybody. And for me, it was kids with AT and running. But the question is, what are you passionate about? And then with that, what sort of vision can you dream up? Can you build? Can you put together? Which for us, it was the vision of the AT Cure Tour. But what's that vision fueled by your passion? You know, to do something extraordinary.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what we try to do here on the podcast. Our tagline for the show is empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. Because we do believe that getting in better shape and reaching out to big goals and getting active is definitely life-changing. The marathon's a life-changing distance. And there's lots of people out there that have been in contact with us and emailed us or sent us a message on Facebook that have given up cigarettes and gotten off the couch and they've never even run before or really considered it, but now they've done a 5K or a 10K or a half marathon, and life is looking better, and they feel healthier than they ever have felt, and they're definitely tapping into a passion stream that maybe they didn't even know was there in the first place.
Yeah, right on. No, that's awesome, and you know, it's pretty clear. The challenge is it's really clear once you've arrived, but I think the challenge that so many people have is we oftentimes don't feel like we have time, we don't feel like we have the energy, you know, to make it happen. And the reality is, I find that when my running drops, when my mileage drops for different reasons, because life happens, I'm more groggy, I'm less productive, I actually sleep more.
Right.
It's this crazy phenomenon, right? And it doesn't really make sense, at the time, but really so many things happen when you run. You just mentally and physically, you just become so much stronger and so much healthier. But it takes some sort of catalyst, to get you, like you said, it takes being inspired, listening to a podcast, hearing a story of somebody overcoming something huge, and it takes a catalyst for getting off the couch. And then, I think, even adding the, running with purpose, and obviously there's so many great charities that you could support now, going out and running. I think also too, adding the philanthropy piece to it, there's those days, like I told you on day three, where, you're just, you might be rolling yourself out of bed thinking, I don't want to do this today. I don't want to make this happen. But because it's not about you,
yeah,
right, and now it's become about others, that oftentimes is the, the inspiration that we need to also, to get out of bed and put our shoes on and go make it happen. And then in the end, like you said, Trevor, it's awesome. Like the change is both internal and external, right?
Right.
Like it's a two-way street. We're changed and impacted by it, and other people are changed and impacted by it. So it's really it's a double benefit.
That's awesome. Well, we've been talking to Tim Borland. He ran 63 marathons in 63 days, and sounds like it was just a warm-up for what he has planned in the future. We're looking forward to following you, Tim, and keeping an eye on what you have going on. If everybody wants to check out Tim's site, timborland.com. And we also made a movie about the 63 marathons in 63 days, and the movie is called Feat, F-E-A-T. And Tim, I just admire the way you've turned your passion for running into a way to bring awareness and do a lot of good and maximize the dash. It's awesome.
Right on. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, it is time for the Marathon Training Academy quick tip. And this time, Angie's going to tell you about the stick.
This is actually something that Tim recommended, and he used this after the 63 marathons that he ran in 63 days. He actually used this in the place of stretching. And the stick is a great tool that can help prevent muscle injuries. It can stretch out your muscles and return optimum blood flow, roll out any knots in the myofascial tissue, and help prevent the lactic acid buildup that often leads to muscle soreness. So many people, from professional athletes to just everyday runners, use this and can find great benefits.
So you can check out a video of Tim demonstrating how he used the stick to prevent muscle soreness after each one of his marathons over at thestick.com. And if you'd like more information on marathon training, you can visit us at marathontrainingacademy.com. While you're there, feel free to download the 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. It's a free audio gift that will give you a solid overview of marathon training. And we want you to know that you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Run on my way, run on my way.